Hello and welcome back to Instant Mom. So for part two of my podcast, I wanted to talk about what really brought me back to recording episodes. A comment that I saw in a foster parent Facebook group, and I see this kind of comment all the time, and it just, it drives me crazy, and I have to stop myself from saying something I'm going to regret on social media. But someone basically said that they'd had a placement of a baby for 2 months. The baby was 2 months old, and they were wondering if at the 6 month court hearing, if there was any chance that perhaps the judge would move the case to adoption. And they were asking because in the 2 months since the baby had been born, the bio mom hadn't really done anything to work her plan. And this drives me crazy for a few reasons. First and foremost, this person is hoping for, and in a previous post asked for prayers for, the case to move to adoption. And that is not what foster care is for. This may be really obvious to some of you who have been in foster parenting for a while or who work in child welfare, but I realize that not everyone may understand this, or they might need a reminder. So just to back up a little bit, let's talk about why foster care exists. Foster care exists to be a temporary solution while the parents get into a position to parent again. So foster care is not meant to be permanent. It's not meant to be particularly long-term, although, of course, that happens. Foster parents are meant to be stand-in parents, temporary parents, until the child's biological parents, or sometimes their family members, are able to become stable enough to take them back, to become reunified. Foster care is meant to preserve the family. It is all about family preservation. And if you go into foster care secretly or outwardly hoping that the case ends in adoption for you, you are not helping to preserve a family, but you are actually destroying a family. And you're traumatizing that child that you're trying to protect, and you're creating a generational cycle of trauma rather than trying to fix the trauma. So I think there are a lot of people who get into foster care because they have heard that it is a cheap way to adopt. And there are a few, misconceptions with foster care. So there are definitely children who are in foster care right now who are legally available for adoption. They are essentially legal orphans. Their parental rights have already been terminated. So legally, they have no parents, or their parental rights are going to be terminated. They just, oftentimes states don't want to create legal orphans. So they basically just have the papers in front of them and wait for adoptive parents to be found, at which time they sign the papers. But those children are by and large older children. So it is incredibly rare that an infant or a toddler or even a child under like 5 or 6 or 7 would be legally free for adoption unless maybe they have a profound disability or they're part of a larger sibling group. It is mostly older kids who have been in the system for a while, whose cases have moved to adoption and whose foster parents don't want or can't adopt them. Mostly the children who are in foster care who are available for adoption are also children of color by and large, and they're children who may have some additional challenges. Maybe that's a physical challenge, a developmental or a psychological challenge. So there's special needs children on top of just, you know, being foster children who inherently have special needs. They're largely children of color and they are largely older. There are lots of those kids across the country just waiting to be adopted right now. And so this is a whole other soapbox that I'll save for another episode, but this is also what drives me crazy. For example, when you see the anti-choice protesters at abortion clinics, which has been in the news a lot lately, and they have these signs saying, "We'll adopt your child, don't abort them."
And I just want to pull up the actual website that has a list of all the children in the United States that are currently waiting to be adopted. It's like, oh man, if you actually wanted to adopt, if you actually cared about a kid, there are literally tens of thousands of children in the US right now that are available for adoption. In fact, there are actually 117,000 children in the United States that are available for adoption right now that are just languishing in foster care because nobody has stepped up to adopt them. So when people are saying, I get questions a lot, they'll send me a message and they'll say, I'm interested in doing foster to adopt. Can you tell me about that? I have to like calm myself down and not yell at them because they could be talking about that. They could be talking about the children who are technically in foster care, but are legally available for adoption. So there's that set of children, and I'm not talking about those children when I'm talking about being annoyed with foster parents who are in it to adopt. Because obviously, if you are becoming a foster parent because you want to adopt one of the children, one of the 117,000 children currently waiting for adoption, that is fantastic. Like, please do that more. So what I'm talking about specifically are the foster parents who generally want babies or infants or young children, like under the age of 5, typically. And they have heard that if you adopt through foster care, it is sometimes free. Sometimes you actually get money from the state. And sometimes it's just very, very low cost compared with private domestic adoptions, where the average adoption costs $35,000, $45,000. I've seen them up to like $65,000. And you see this all the time in groups. And they just would like an adoption to be easy and cheap, and they are willing to roll the dice, so to speak, and foster a child who might not be available for adoption, and then they hope that the case does end in adoption for them. And I just want to acknowledge that I understand, obviously, the bonding that happens when you're a foster parent and you have a child in your care and you become so attached and you love them so fiercely that it is really hard to imagine life without them. I completely understand that. I empathize with that. That has happened to me over a dozen times, quite literally. I remember when my first placement went home, I went to my mom's house and I just sobbed on her shoulder because it was such a huge loss. And it was a lot of grief for me. I was actively supporting her reunification. I didn't even really necessarily want to adopt at the time. But when you say goodbye, it's still a profound loss and it's really tough. So I understand just the human instinct of being like, but this baby has been mine for, you know, the past X number of months, or this child has been mine for the past number of months, and I don't want to give them back. I want to keep them. I understand that impulse. But as foster parents, we are called to move beyond that initial impulse and understand that we got into this, or we should have gotten into this, to preserve families. And that is hard work. It's hard work on every level, and it's especially hard work emotionally and psychologically, because we are told to love these children as if they were our own, to care for them and protect them and love them as if they came from our own bodies. But we are also told that we need to know and expect and encourage giving them back to their parents. And that's a really tricky thing to do. And not everybody can do that. Not everybody is called to do that. And that's okay. That's an earlier mistake that I made when I first started foster parenting, is I would get really upset when people wouldn't consider foster parenting. And now I get it. Not everybody can do this. Not everybody should do this. And I think that is a really hard conversation foster parents or people who are thinking about fostering need to have with themselves and be very honest. If you are placed with a baby and you pick up a newborn from the hospital and they're with you for a year and a half, how will you handle giving them back? It's not a matter of can you give them back, because obviously you have to, but do you have the strength, do you have the moral and ethical fortitude to be able to actively encourage reunification when inside your heart is saying, no, 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 I want you to stay here forever with me? And that is really, really difficult. And if you don't think you can do that, that's okay. Just admit you can't do that, and maybe foster parenting isn't for you, and there's some other way that you can help children in need. I got this really great message on Instagram from a woman who saw my earlier rant about foster parents who secretly or not so secretly hope that their case ends in adoption. And she had this great message. She said, you know what? I thought about becoming a foster parent, but I was struggling with some infertility. And I was really honest with myself and knew that I was not in a good place emotionally to be a foster parent because I would not be able to root for family preservation, honestly and truly, because I would want that baby to myself. And I think that is so awesome that she had that gut check with herself and was able to be honest and said, as much as I want to help, this is actually not going to help. So I can't do this. That is so important. So it is okay if you have that reflection and you think, yeah, no, I can't do this, or I don't want to do this. That's great. Find something else, some other way to help. And there are a million other ways to help if that isn't right for you. So I understand the impulse to want to have that child stay with you forever, but we have to move past that impulse. And on the flip side of that, this particular Facebook message that this woman asked, you know, hoping that the case could be moved to adoption at 6 months, was so frustrating because foster parents oftentimes want the parents to change like that. They want them to change so quickly. And this is a particularly extreme example in this foster parent's case of expecting that now at 2 months postpartum, this woman would have just straightened up. I mean, you have to put yourself in someone else's shoes. This mother gave birth 2 months ago, so she's healing physically from the trauma of childbirth. She's probably dealing with postpartum depression on top of probably having some mental health issues that she had even before she gave birth. She's dealing with addiction, a very powerful addiction. This person also said the mom is homeless. So she has no house. She has no job, no place to live, doesn't know where her next meal is coming from. Physically recovering from childbirth, postpartum depression, most likely, probably some other mental health issues from before she gave birth. And you think she should have her act together in 60 days? Like, what? Are you kidding me? It's just, we hold bio parents to these impossible standards sometimes. And whenever I say this kind of thing, I will always get someone who sends me a message or comments and they're like, well, I had this case where my foster's bio parent like beat them until they almost died and there's no way they should give that child back. And I want to be like, yes, Karen, obviously no one is saying that we should push for family preservation if the child was horrifically abused, right? Like no one is saying, oh yes, I think it is a great idea to give an abuser their child back. But most of the foster care cases, and I have a book that has this statistic somewhere, but I don't have it handy, but it's something like, I think it was like the number was like 60 to 75% of foster care cases aren't actually any kind of physical or sexual abuse, but they're neglect. And sometimes neglect can be incredibly severe, but sometimes, and in fact, oftentimes, the neglect is much more subtle and it stems from a parent being living in poverty and not having the resources they need, or having their own mental health or developmental challenges, or having addictions that they can't meet their own needs, nonetheless, their children. But these are all things that can be fixed. It is not some inherent personality flaw that this person has that just can't be fixed. And there are ways to support family preservation while making sure the child is safe along the way. But these things don't happen overnight. They can't happen in 2 months. They don't happen in 6 months. Sometimes they don't happen in a year or a year and a half. And I have so much empathy for foster parents because I have also been in this position where you've had the child for a year and a half. You are the only parent they've ever known. You are bonded with them. And you're thinking like, why on earth would the system give this child back to their bio parent when the bio parent hasn't been in the picture for a year and a half? And I've said that myself when I first started out and just didn't know any better before I was really educated about family preservation. And to those parents, I'd say, I need you to take a deep breath and I need you to zoom out. A year and a half or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years seems ridiculous to have a parent miss out on that with their child, especially when the child is, you know, has only ever known their foster parent. But if you zoom out and you think, okay, Maybe mom took 2 full years to get her act together. But now the child is 2 and mom is safe and healthy and stable and she can parent. Yes, it will absolutely be an adjustment for that child who may have a tremendous bond with their foster parent. And absolutely, there will be grief and heartache and all kinds of messy emotions on both sides. But if you zoom out and you think, but this child has 16 years now with their bio parent before they would become an adult. And in those 16 years to bond with and reconnect with and love their bio parent, foster care will be but a memory. And in fact, they may not even remember their time in foster care or remember you as the foster parent. And so when you zoom out and you think about, wow, that child can grow up and their story can be, my mom worked her ass off to get me back. And I am so proud of my mom for overcoming all these challenges, overcoming perhaps a generational cycle of challenges. That child can feel, I'm choking up. I'm such a wuss, you guys. That child can have so much pride in their parent and so much pride in themselves of being able to internalize, my mom fought for me. I am worthy. Because we know, and studies have shown, that children who are adopted or who are in foster care, even in the best of circumstances, even in private adoptions, when it was their mother's choice to choose adoption, we know that many of them, as they're older, internalize this adoption as a rejection. Why didn't my mom fight for me? Why didn't my mom want me? We know that's not actually what the mom or the dad was thinking, but that's what the child, or even as they grow into an adult, can sometimes feel. So if we can save them that trauma, that's amazing. And then you've also empowered the parent and you've shown them that, like, look at what you conquered. Look at what you overcame. Look at how strong you are. Look at how fierce of a mother you are. Then you've empowered them that they have finally broken the generational cycle. And that cycle stopped with them. Rather than just saying, well, sorry, it's been 2 years. We're taking your kid away. And they would probably sink back into that cycle again and just continue it. So even when it is those extenuating circumstances of, oh my God, it's been 2 years. How can they do this? You've just got to zoom out and look at the bigger picture and not just think about the immediate fallout or the immediate consequences, and certainly not just think about the harm or the pain that it might cause you as a foster parent, because that is completely irrelevant in this picture. So that's that part of the soapbox I'm on. But also, I wish that this one person who commented about, you know, oh gosh, I hope our case ends in adoption. It's been 2 months and mom has done nothing. I wish her post would have been, gosh, it's been 2 months and mom has done nothing. How can I encourage her? How can I advocate for her? How can I motivate her? Now, of course, we're all adults and we all have to be accountable for our decisions, and you can't make somebody change. I fully acknowledge that, but you can encourage, and it's got to be a really tough spot. I cannot imagine being a postpartum mother, homeless, not knowing when I'm going to eat again, having no idea where my child is and if she's okay. I mean, talk about hitting rock bottom. You are the rock bottom of the rock bottom of the rock bottom. How meaningful would it be if she got a heartfelt letter from the foster parent that was like, we are rooting for you. We love you. We know you can do this. What difference could that make for this mom who has hit rock bottom? Maybe that would be enough to give her a little bit of hope to just try a little bit harder the next day, knowing that there's a full team cheering her on and giving her some hope. So we have to think as foster parents of ways to encourage reunification and to encourage the biological family and to let them know that we are not their enemy. Because bio parents get it. They also see these crazy foster parents who are just getting into this because they want a baby cheaply, right? And that's that parent's worst nightmare is, oh my God, are you only doing this because you're trying to take my child away from me? And unfortunately, a lot of times they're right about that. And so if right off the bat, you can let the parents know, like, we are not trying to take your child from you. We will love her and we will care for her as if she was our own, but we want to give her back to you, and let them know that you are their team, that can go such a long way. And that's just the reality of it. I think so often bio parents and foster parents are seen as adversaries, and we are technically all on the same team, right? We are all on team kid. And we all want to rally around this child and make sure the child can be in the best possible environment. And that means trying family preservation in every way possible. And again, for the Karens who are going to message me, I realize it is not always possible. I have fostered over a dozen children. I clearly know that some bio parents should never, can never get their children back. I get it. You don't need to message me and tell me about the horrific things you've seen, because I have seen them too. But that is not the majority of cases. And there's some concrete and really, really easy ways that we can encourage this. And so in response to this woman on this Facebook post, I, instead of leaving the snarky message that I really, really wanted to, I gave her some suggestions that have worked for us of, you know, she said that mom wasn't going to visits, so she didn't necessarily have an opportunity to give mom pictures or updates directly. But I said, you know, in those circumstances for us, what we have done is started a baby book, or even I've just gotten like a regular plain old notebook from Target, and I've literally like printed out pictures, taped them in the notebook, and then written little entries about like, today baby did this, and these are some things she likes, and this is what's going on day to day. And then encouraged mom to write back if she would like to. And then I passed that through the caseworker, because the caseworker is more or less most likely meeting with the bio parents at least a little bit. And so the caseworker can pass those back and forth. And that is a great way for mom to see like, hey, I care about you, I care about your child, we're rooting for you, and we're on your team. And maybe that can motivate them just enough to try a little bit harder the next day. For bio parents who are trying hard and who are showing that motivation and encouragement, foster parents can actually try to advocate to give them more visits and longer visits and unsupervised visits once they sort of prove their safety. Now, foster parents, of course, don't get to dictate visitation. That is up to a judge. Not even DCS gets to dictate visitation. You know, a judge orders how much and how often and what type of visitation. But foster parents can attend court dates, and they can appear in person and make comments, or they can send in written comments to the judge in advance of the hearing with their perspective and their recommendations. So if you see that your kid's bio parent is doing well, write the judge or show up and say, you know what, they're doing awesome. The visits are going really well. I would just like to say that I would personally love to see more visits, longer visits, trying an overnight visit. Like, that can go a really long way toward letting that parent know that you're on their side. And also, I think just keeping that door open to communication. Now, again, it is not always safe and it is not always appropriate for a foster parent to share their contact information for a bio parent. So please do not think that I am advocating for you as a foster parent to just go giving out your phone number or your email address or your last name or whatever to birth parents. That is definitely not a safe thing to do as a standard. But if you have, you know, been going to visits with bio parent, if they've been in your life for a while and you've seen that they're trying and they're working toward progress, then it's something to consider. I have done that with a few bio parents of my foster kiddos, where I've exchanged phone numbers, or I've exchanged an email address that doesn't have my last name in it. I've never given out my location or my address or anything like that, but I felt comfortable with a text message. And of course, always let your caseworker know what you're going to do so that they can, you know, tell you yes or no if they have hard feelings one way or the other. But that's another great way to build that relationship as the parent has shown that they are, you know, working towards safety and working their plan, because you can encourage them and teach them too. Another thing that I always see people complain about on foster parent groups is how visits are going, particularly with babies. And they'll say like, oh my gosh, like, you know, bio mom didn't even know how to feed her the bottle, or she didn't know to burp the baby, and the baby came home all gassy and upset, and kind of all of these things. And it's like, well, you know, if baby was removed at birth or thereafter, she doesn't know this baby. And if it's her first child, she may have no idea how to do any of this. No one's taught her, and she hasn't had an opportunity to learn on her own. You know, we all make those mistakes. I remember when I first started fostering my very first baby, I somehow put the nipple on the bottle wrong. It's kind of hard to explain, but I mean, it was fine. The baby was getting fed, but one of my friends looked at it, and she had three kids at the time, and she was like, oh my God, you've done this totally wrong. Like, you just don't know until someone teaches you. And so I also try to write really detailed instructions for visits, and detailed in a way that doesn't feel like it is patronizing, but in a way that is trying to be helpful. Like, hey, let me give you some tips and tricks that have worked for me. Like, tell them, what position does the baby like to be fed in? Do you burp the baby after so many ounces or what? You know, like, do they like to be swaddled for their naps? And what, how often do they nap? And what is their routine? And if they're gassy, what works for them to help their tummies feel better? Or if it's an older child, like, what games do they like to play? And what are their friends' names so that bio parents can have some information to ask them questions about and get them engaged? So, like, help them help themselves. Give them a little bit of that head start so they feel comfortable and they can be the best parent they can be, because they just might not know any better. So I think trying to see yourself when you're the foster parent as a mentor and a guide for the bio parent and their cheerleader can just be so helpful. And selfishly, it will make you feel so much better when that child is reunited, because you will have the comfort of knowing, you know what, I was able to build up a relationship with this bio parent to some degree or another, and I gave them the information they need to meet their child's needs, and they know that they have support in me. And that can just go such a long way. So I just want to remind everybody, in summary, one, foster parenting is not supposed to be permanent. If your case moves to adoption, it's because foster care failed. It was not able to fix what was broken. It was not able to preserve a family. So please do not root for your case to end in adoption. Root that family preservation, whether it's with the bio parents or maybe some extended family that's able to take the child, root that family preservation is able to happen. Ask for prayers for the family to be preserved, and ask for prayers for you to be able to deal with the really tricky emotions that come with that. But do not pray that a family is broken up. It's just, it's ridiculous. Number two, your job is to not only support and advocate for the child, but to support and advocate for family preservation. So expand your role. Loving the bio parent is loving your foster child. So set that great example. Only talk positively about their parents in front of them, which again can be tricky. I get it. But we never want to badmouth the parents in front of the children, or talk down about the visits or the progress on the case. Only say those positive things in front of the kids. And if you can't, just don't say anything at all. And show the parent that you are on their team, and think of some ways that you can proactively show your love in an action to them. And I think that third item is just to really reflect, if you're considering foster parenting, or even if you're already in it and you're struggling with this, if you're feeling defensive about what you're hearing, if you're like, but maybe that's because this is not for you. And that's okay. There are lots of things that are not for me. And foster parenting is not for everyone. So really have that tough talk with yourself. Can I really walk the walk and talk the talk of family preservation when it's not all roses and fairy tales and puppy dogs? Can I still hang with it? And if you can't, I've got a million other ways that you can support children in need and families in need if this doesn't turn out to be the right thing for you. So please, I know it's, you love that child, you want them to stay with you. I get it. I have sobbed my way through over a dozen placements, but we owe it to the children to root for their families. So think about what you can do to preserve the family, to strengthen the family, to help them break generational cycles. And that is what foster parenting is all about. All right, I'll get off my soapbox now. Thank you guys so much for listening. It feels good to be back. If you have any questions, comments, any ideas of what you'd like me to cover in future podcast episodes, you can always message me on Instagram @efriedland or shoot me an email, elizabeth.friedland@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.